Ladies and gentlemen, we've got Nick Abraham in the house. Nick, introduce yourself. Actually, I'm gonna tell one interesting thing about Nick to pique your interest. So Nick has, what, 150 active clients at the moment for a Legion agency, like four SaaSes, right? Is that correct? I don't know. Anyway, I'll let you fill in the details because Nick is an interesting dude. Happy to have you here, Nick.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me on. I think we're at like 156 clients currently right now. And then with the SaaSes, we're starting to like kind of roll them up into our agency because some of them just don't really have like a strong product market fit. So it doesn't really make sense to run them as like a solo product and just kind of use them within the agency. So yeah, that's really it. Been running Leadbird for I think about 4 years now. I think we're on pace to hopefully be one of the largest Legion agencies, and we're completely performance based. So that's basically a quick rundown on us.
So you don't have no retainer, like totally performance?
Yeah, I mean, like if you want to consider our tech fee a retainer, it's super small, so I don't really consider a retainer.
Sure.
But everything is predominantly performance based. So you pay per every meeting ready lead, which is what we call it.
Right. Okay. And one of the things I think is like super or stands out to me anyway about you and stands out to a lot of other people is the amount of tech and systems you have implemented. I'm actually kind of like, you share a lot of these, right? So one of the things I was curious about is, I have a theory on why you do it, but do you share all the automations and stuff that you do to kind of like brag to your clients that like you can handle, like you can hand, like, yes, I have 157 clients, but like your money is safe with us. Like we can get you solid results. Or are you like
joining a mentor
young? Yeah. Like, I mean, you're a businessman, so I'm sure you're not doing it out of the goodness of your heart purely, but like what's the thinking there? Cause you share a lot and yeah. So,
Yeah, I think it comes out of two things. So I think it comes out of three things. So I think the first one is like when I post content, I think like everyone posts the same stuff about cold email and there's not much you could talk about there. So it's just like the typical, hey, it's what you do for deliverability. Here's some cool angles and we'll post that kind of stuff, but it gets repetitive really quickly. So like when I want to post content, I want to post content about things that I enjoy. And what I enjoy is like the automations and the operations and like kind of talking about like what we built. Cause it's like, it's fun. It's like, you know, we just put this cool feature and like half of you guys that are reading this, you guys won't ever be able to build this feature. And it's like kind of like a bragging point. I think the other thing too is that, you know, with most people that sign up with a Legion agency, they see that like, you know, they don't want to work with an agency where they've only managed five clients. They probably won't be able to do a great job, right? So unless you're getting a crazy good deal, it usually doesn't mean much and it like won't make much sense. And you know, they probably wouldn't be a good long-term partner. And like, I think like anyone that's hiring agencies, they should realize that like the agencies that are going to do the best are the ones that have actually managed and have experience doing this with a ton of clients. Because if they haven't hit that growth and scale stage, whenever they do, you can almost guarantee that everything that they're doing with you is probably going to fall apart. And you know, that happened to us. And that's just the growing pains of any agency that scales fast. And so like, I think that's like another point that like we like to really push across. And I think that the last one is, I think a majority of my followers are like all Legion agencies. So you could say like direct competitors. You know, I'm never going to release a course. That's just not like my type of vibe. But what I would love to do at one point is be able to like license out our entire backend. So like all the tech we've built and be able to license that out to Legion agencies because they know that, you know, we're at the very top when it comes to operations, automations, and just like overall, just like building a Legion agency. So I think that's kind of like why I show a lot of the automations and stuff like that. But I think also too, it's like, you know, a lot of people that want to hire a Legion agency, when they see like this crazy thing that no one else is speaking about, they're like, oh shit, like I need that. And so then they'll reach out and try to get a call with us and sign and whatnot.
Love it. I got a question for you. Obviously you've been sharing a lot of this stuff on Twitter, but lately I've been seeing a pivot going into crypto. Or at least I saw a slither of it. Can you walk me through what happened there?
Yeah, you know, unfortunately, my account got hacked literally on Saturday. So that's what, 2 days ago. I was literally using the restroom and I'm looking at my phone and I see that your Twitter email has been changed. And I was like, oh God, here we go. And you know, it's funny. I actually DM'd my own profile from my other account, like our Leadbird account. And I was like, hey guys, like, I'll pay you money to give you back my account. And the guy was like, hey, we'll give it back to you for free in a day. But instead of giving it back to me for free in a day, the account actually just gets suspended because they're pushing the crypto stuff really hard. And Twitter, I mean, Twitter doesn't like that. And yeah, now the account is suspended and we're working with support to get it back, but see what happens.
So you're not a crypto guru, just clear clarification on that.
Don't own a single piece of crypto anywhere, so definitely not a crypto guru anywhere.
Oh, geez. So, okay. Did you always know? Okay, so I saw some old, I think I saw an old picture of you where you were like working at like a convenience store, like a grocery store or something crappy like that. Did you always, like, were you always like a systems guy? Did that evolve as you learned about business? Because like, yeah, so, okay, so for example, like I used to work at Burger King, right, in high school. But even then I was like crazy competitive with like, how do we make a burger as fast as possible? Like, how do we get our drive-through time down and like optimizing for that? I was really good at math for that. So like, were you always like the systems operations guy or?
Yeah, I think so. I think like in a different way. Yeah, I think like in a different way. And what I mean by that is that I was just always super organized. Like I loved like just having like a standard process. And I would always think about like, kind of like in a way, just unknowingly SOPs, like, you know, what is the straightforward way of like how to go about doing something? And like whenever, and you know, I have a super old grandma and you know, teaching her anything, it's like, you got to really break it down step by step all the way down to the T. And so like, I think like those kind of things are just always like being super organized kind of leads into like becoming like a systems and automations and operator type thing. But that was like the characteristics I had like early on, but I wasn't trying to figure out how to make the burger the fastest or anything like that. I was just super, super organized.
Nice.
I got a question, Ryan. I want to, cause I'm super curious and I'm sure you probably wrote about this, but what's the backstory of Leadbird and is this your first business you ever ran? How did the initial days, like, give me the full backstory of like, you going through high school, and then I don't know if you went to college or not, but like, give me that whole backstory of like going from not being a business owner and then starting your first business, and then sort of walk me through how Nick Abraham became the CEO of Leadbird.
Yeah,
yeah.
How did Nick Abraham become the Nick Abraham?
So I think I've always done entrepreneurial stuff ever growing up. So like, I think the first thing I ever did in middle school was I used to sell like custom Nike Elite socks. I'm not sure if you remember those.
Yeah,
but they're just like the. So I used to like literally dye them with my friends and sell them at school. And like, I would just try like every kind of hustle growing up, you know, whatever was under the moon, like I would try to figure that out. And so, you know, I did stuff with like shoe flipping. I used to work at Foot Action when I was like a sophomore in high school. So I used to get like the Yeezy drops early and like the Space Jams, the Jordan 11s, like all that stuff. I would go resell them on StockX. So like, I just always was trying to do business related things to just kind of make money. But I think the mindset shift that I had when I was younger, and I think everyone that's younger has this, it's like, what's the fastest way to make quick money, right? Like you see all these guys on Instagram, you see all these guys on YouTube, and you're like, I want that lifestyle. Like, what's the quickest way to do it? You know, I'm even buying books about how to trade stocks and trying to figure out that game. Like I'm just trying to learn as much as I could. And, you know, I think any like good entrepreneur, they just have so many failures, and that's what I had. And that's eventually led to Leadbird. So I think my first ever like kind of business success was I grew an Instagram page to about 50,000 followers. That was like one of those like theme pages. And I was selling like growth Instagram PDFs off of that. And like that, I think I was a senior in high school and that got to like, I think like $3,000 to $4,000 a month, maybe a little bit more. And solid. You know, at that point, and I was like, and it was all pure organic traffic. I was like, oh, this is like huge, you know, it's like right into getting into college, like, was doing pretty good off of just like selling the PDFs. Obviously there was highs and lows. I think like the peak when we released the PDF was like probably in that 6 to 8K range. But like that was my first like real true success. And it's funny, like my freshman year in college, I ended up working at the gas station we were talking about earlier. And I was still running this Instagram page. And I was just like, damn, this is crazy. Like, I'm getting paid like $11 per hour, but like, you know, I'm not putting in more than like 2 to 3 hours worth of work on the Instagram page. And that's like outputting way more than a whole day of work. And so it's just like seeing that kind of like really shifted me into understanding like, okay, there's higher leverage things than getting paid per hour or working at a job that I should probably look into. And so eventually I ended up selling that Instagram page for some really ridiculously low amounts of money. I think I sold it for like $3,000 because I just wanted to go on a vacation with, I think, my girlfriend at that time. I say at that time, but I'm still dating her now, which is funny. She's going to hear this. She's gonna be like, what the hell? But so we wanted to go on a vacation or something like that. Or I wanted her to buy her, I don't know, something there. And so I ended up selling the page because I just wanted a quick money grab, which was, you know, obviously a dumb decision at that point because it was cash flowing. And I eventually ran out of money and I was like, okay, like I want to start growing, or I'm going to start growing Instagram pages for people as like an agency service. And so I ended up building an agency that was like a full stack agency. And, you know, I was growing Instagram pages as my main offer. And like, I just chose doctors as random niche to target into. And I like, you know, built the website, you know, what's called the creative LLC. And I just kind of sat there and I was thinking like, how the hell do I get clients? And that was like the bottleneck. And so then, you know, I went down the rabbit hole of like learning outbound sales. So like got a couple books, watched a lot of YouTube videos and tried like everything from cold calling to cold emailing to writing Instagram DMs, like all these type of things. And I eventually just got good at it. And I was signing a decent amount of clients, but you know, the product that I was selling, Instagram Growth for Doctors, churn was super high, obviously, because it was really solve the pain point for them. It doesn't really help them generate new patients. And so like I was probably churning like half the customers I'd sign within a month, maybe 2 months. But that was the first ever business that I was able to hit a $10,000 month. And so that was huge for me. I think I was like at that time, like a sophomore or junior in college. And eventually I just saw that this business wasn't a business that would scale. Because like it doesn't have like what I call service market fit. Like what I'm selling is not a solution that the market actually wants. And even my margins weren't even that great because the way we were kind of going about Instagram growth at that time, like we were charging like $500 to $750 retainers. I would have a whole team in the Philippines that was like editing videos and then doing like the manual engagement. And so like, you know, there just wasn't much of a margin for it to actually like work. So, you know, when I made the $10,000, like my take home was probably under 1500, I would say. And I was working super hard. Yeah. I didn't know how to run the business at the time.
Whoa. Okay.
And, you know, I was working like, you know, that was probably like the most I've ever worked in my life. Like, you know, 80 hours a week, bare minimum. And was just always stressed because I was trying to like make sure that I was, you know, handling all these clients myself, didn't have any account managers, none of that. And then what I really liked about that entire biz model though, was the outbound sales. Like I was obsessed with it. Like, running the cold emails, getting all the positive replies, booking the calls, like that part was super fun. And I think I had like a Facebook group where I was kind of like documenting a lot of this. And I had a lot of people in there that would reach out and be like, hey, like, can you do this for me? Can you book us calls? And I was doing that for them on the side. And that eventually became Libre because I figured out that I could do cold emails really well. And then, you know, we just had a whole bunch of advantages that helped us along the way. You know, I was able to partner with a couple of people to build a couple, you know, SaaSes that helped lower our cost. So I was able to run at a lower price and still be extremely profitable because our margins are higher. And just do a lot of other things that kind of, you know, obviously took us to where we're at right now. But yeah, that's kind of like a long-winded story of like how everything came to be.
Yeah. You know, what's interesting is the fact that you actually had like a business first. So I think one of the things that's like a superpower if you're an entrepreneur, like in the agency space, is like actually having the full stack experience of finding leads, selling those leads, fulfilling on the offer, getting testimonials, and then like specializing in one of those things, because you actually learn like the psychology of the rest of the like buying experience, and you learn you actually know the rest of the process, right? So, like, I'm sure when you went into the lead gen space, like, you had such an advantage because you'd already set leads, like, for your own thing. and you knew like you had like skin in the game, right? Whereas if like I could go to somebody else and be like, hey, I'll make you like whatever. If I went and try to sell Instagram theme pages, I would have no idea how to do it because I've never done like it never has connected anything for me, right? So yeah, I think that's super. You think it's do you think like somebody coming into the cold email space, if they've never run like the rest of a business before, would have the same level of advantage or success as somebody who's got the experience of like running the full stack?
So it's actually kind of funny. This is like a realization I just had like a couple, like maybe like 6 months ago. It's like, I think in this space, you know, you guys see on Twitter, there's probably like what, 10 to 15 new lead gen agencies popping up a day. And, you know, they're all copying the same strategies that we all use. And you know, the barrier to enter is getting lower and lower every day. So there's just more competition. But what I realized is that, you know, a lot of these people are jumping in. They're trying to make fast money. They're trying to make a quick buck. They don't really want to have an agency that has 100 clients. The other thing, too, is like, you know, they're trying to rely on these hacks. They're trying to figure out what is this new way to acquire clients? Like, you know, what is this little simple copywriting thing and offer I could put in my cold emails? And what they don't realize is that it's not the hacks. It's not the little copywriting strategies or lead list deliverability stuff that's really going to scale your agency. It's becoming like a relentless operator. So knowing how to recruit, knowing how to manage a team, knowing how to build these operations and systems. And that stuff only comes with experience and like time. And that's why I'm not like, you know, I get the question like all the time. I'm like, are you scared with all the people jumping in the space? And I'm like, absolutely not. Like, I've done my time. I've done my you know, experience building and, you know, failing and learning how to do all the things from like start to finish. And like, even beyond that and scale and learn how to manage teams and whatnot. And so like, we're just ahead of the curve when it comes to that side of things. And I think that's like the curve that really a lot of people just kind of get stuck at. It's like once they've had 10 clients, like how to manage that, how to get themselves out of fulfillment, how to make sure fulfillment still delivers. It's like, that's stuff that's super hard and most people won't figure out.
You know, I have a theory on this as well. I tweeted about this like Friday or Saturday, I think, so a couple days ago. And here's my observation, right? Is that there's like, I used to run a coaching business, which is a story from another time, but like it didn't go very well. And I realized, I learned this from Daniel Fazio. He said that, you know, if you want to run a coaching business, you have to be kind of like famous, right? Because otherwise, like no one's going to trust somebody who has like 20 followers to be their coach for like literally anything, because the amount of trust that you need to be a coach is so high, right? To make money as a coach is so high. So you have like, I think, two types of agencies in the space. You have an agency that started with partners and yeah, you know, it's like a bunch of friends that join together and they're all willing to work for basically $0, willing to like hustle really, really, really hard. You know, you grow up to like 50K, 100K a month, whatever it is. And then they like realize that running an agency is actually extremely challenging to like recruit the team that's a fresh team, right? And then they pivot to go and do like an info product offer, right? Or like some other kind of like biz op. And then you have like the people that they teach the marketing offer to, who, if they're like solo founders, like it's challenging to go from like 5 or 10K to 15 to 20, because that means like hiring a team and learning operations, which not a lot of people are like even teaching in the space. Like there's really not a lot of like the most of the dialogue on the internet is like, how do you go to 0 to 10, right? How do you grow an SMMA? How do you get your first clients? Whatever. No one's like, here's how you hire a person without going broke, right? Or here's how you like hire a person without crushing your client results. And so I think it's like my prediction is going to be a lot of like 10,000 person agency or 10,000, you know, per month agencies that are run by one person who's like completely overworked, who just like cannot escape that level unless they learn operate. Like that's the operations thing, right? Is getting there. But the sexy content is like, how do you get 30 calls booked per month, right? How do you get unlimited leads? How like, well, yeah, you gotta like then keep those clients once you have them.
I think the other thing too is that like, a lot of these agencies that pop up that have like a lot of co-founders, so they have like, you know, two to three other co-founders, what they don't realize is that I honestly think in the agency space, it's better to start off alone because you acquire more skills. So I think that's like one of the best things that ever helped me. Like, I'm a solo founder, you know, I built my entire team, went and hired everyone. And throughout this entire process, like, I've learned sales, I've learned lead gen, I've learned the operations, I've learned the recruiting, the management. I've just learned all of it. I may not be a true master in everything specifically, but I'm learning it. And so like these skills translate. So I could, you know, let's say Leadbird fails for some odd reason tomorrow. And, you know, I need to go start another business, or, you know, I have another great idea. Like, a lot of these skills that I've acquired by running Leadbird translate. And I feel like when you have a co-founder that kind of limits like the skill of acquisition that you don't get. And then, you know, you're basically, let's say you're equal partners, you know, you're splitting the pie three ways. Now your margins are lower. You know, whenever you're trying to remove that specific partner from whatever role they're doing so you can scale further, like, it makes it a lot harder. And I truly don't think that I would have got to where we're at right now if I had a co-founder. And I think a lot of people start businesses without realizing who their partner is. It's like, you need to have a partner that has skills that you don't have, right? Or has like some hidden, unique advantage that you can't buy in the next 12 months. That's going to help you, you know, 10x your business. And so I think like a lot of people just kind of hop in because like they're afraid to actually run it on their own and fail on their own. But it feels good in the moment, but I think in the long term, it really does hurt most agency owners.
Yeah, that's interesting. I don't know if I have to like respectfully or like maybe qualify that, right? Like,
yeah.
As long as your co-founder isn't Croatian, you're probably all set. But I would definitely agree to like businesses. What I really like about business or like any kind of project or challenge that I take on is like the skills or like the mindsets you learn along the way. And like whether you to me, like Tony has taught me a lot, or just like we talk a lot about, hey, we should do this or you know, we should try this thing, we should try this thing, we should try this thing. I almost look at like, to me anyway, my perspective on having a co-founder is like having a coach that you talk to every single day. And so the way that we're thinking about it is like growing, you know, growing the pie just twice as big, twice as fast versus taking limited equity. But at the same time, like I've had businesses before and Tony's had businesses before where we were solo. And so I think there's probably like, I think there's merits to doing it both ways.
Yeah.
Like
I agree with you, Nick, in terms of if this is your first go, I say start a solo business because
100%
by you being solo, you're going to sort of have to
like,
jump. And then
I would say you guys are a good pair in the sense where like, right. I feel like you're more of like a developer. And then Tony's more of like, you know, teams management, like the actual like people management side of things. And so I think like that meshes well together. And I think like both of you guys are older in the sense of like, you're just more mature. When I say this, I'm speaking more of like the first time business owner. That's like, you know, 18 and 19 years old, kind of doing this with a friend. That's the person I'm speaking to in that sense.
Yeah. And like here, I mean, the other thing too, is like, if you're 18 or 19 and like somebody comes along and they want to partner with you, like, you have no idea, like, you just have their words, right? You have no idea what this person's
no track record
done. They have zero track record, and all of a sudden you want to, you know, give them half of your business, right? So they could be a complete disaster from a character standpoint. They could have no work ethic.
I would say the long story short when it comes to it, this is my.
I mean, I've done a good amount of partnerships and.
Go for it, Nick. Sorry.
Oh, go ahead, Tony. Sorry. Oh, no. I was just gonna say that, like, I've been in a couple of business partnerships where, like, I realized that I would have been able to go a little faster and further if I was able to do it alone, just because I would have like complete control of the business decisions. But there are other scenarios where I've had partners where I'm like for example, I'm partnered up with my CTO on a new SaaS that we just came out with, and like I know for a fact that I would not be able to grow this without him because I'm not a developer by any means. And so like, you know, I think business partnerships it's case by case, but I think in some cases it's an amplifier, in some cases it's not. And so, yeah, I think it's just like important for like anyone that's listening to just like really think it through all the way and make sure that they're choosing the right person. Like, I think business partnerships are even more important than like marriage, because it's like, there's a lot. Mm. I mean, actually, I mean, that's a tough one. I don't know if I would say that out loud. But I think they both go to
shift this to your wife, Tony.
Oh, yeah. See if she agrees.
Yeah. Nick, what do you think about Instagram theme, not even theme pages, but Instagram for like agencies or service-based businesses that are like, I mean, like, okay, so I'm thinking like for us, right? So hypothetically, do you think it'd be a good idea to like start a bunch of, you know, reels and then promote some kind of like lead magnet? Or the other thing I'm thinking is like, how many serious business owners are actually on Instagram? Like, and maybe this is a mental block. Maybe this is a...
You're just like old, Ryan. You're just old,
Instagram,
right?
Is for children. but at the same time, like, we have lots of great clients that are in their early 20s and so on and so forth. So like, do you see it today as a serious B2B tool, or is it a little bit like played out?
Yeah. I think putting content everywhere is good. I think like, you know, all the algorithms based off the content you're engaging with and posting about and people that engage with you will just kind of attract that type of audience. And so like, I mean, I think it's still a good thing to do, but I don't think it's like a channel you got to figure out how to like absolutely dial in. I mean, I think the two channels that I like the most right now are LinkedIn and YouTube. And it's funny because YouTube's like the harder one to actually grow on and figure out, specifically for a lot of like content that we would post, which is less like how to get your first client. And it's more of like, you know, how to build this entire systems and process, which doesn't really perform as well, just because it doesn't have the catchy headline and the thumbnail and whatnot. And so, yeah, I think those are the two channels I would focus on. But yeah, I think Instagram, obviously if you're selling any kind of like info product, I think it's absolutely bananas. But yeah, I think for us, like where we're trying to find like more established businesses, probably not the best, but would have hurt to have in the mix.
Yeah, at the end of the game, it's impressions as well. The more impressions you can get, it's gonna somehow figure out its way to get into your funnel, and that's gonna drive everything.
Yeah, absolutely.
I want to ask you a question. You mentioned something earlier about, you know, the barrier of entry to getting to cold email is you know, steadily getting lower and lower, and it's decreasing with time. And I've seen this shift happen in media buying, where like media buying used to be this like super technical skill set, and now you just run a broad campaign, and the algorithm is so good that it, you know, figures out what's the best way to run the ad itself. So I think this, you know, with the new tools that are coming out, you know, ListKit and stuff like that, it's getting simpler and simpler to run these campaigns on cold email. How do you think that's affecting the landscape of the businesses, where you mentioned like, sure, there's a lot of people that are, you know, small, they're just getting started, but I think a lot of businesses now internally are going to start developing this skill set. How do you feel, or like, what do you feel like is the skill set that is going to separate, you know, because the tools are there, like everyone can whip up a list now, everyone can, you know, get on an sending tool and start sending emails. What do you think is the differentiator between a successful email campaign and an unsuccessful one?
Yeah, so I mean, it's pretty cool to see, right? Like, I think if you looked at the last 3 years, I think the amount of cold email influencers, which I like to call them, which are just people posting cold emails, is increasing at a rapid rate. So like the information is just getting spread, and it's the basic stuff. It's like, you know, the stuff that everyone should have been doing, you know, 5, 7, 10 years ago. But they just didn't have the knowledge or the ease of how to do it. I think where the barrier is getting lower and lower is like with the price of everything. So like, you know, back in the day, everyone was using Weblist. And for that, you know, you got to pay per seat for each inbox that you add in. And then, you know, with lead costs, there was no Apollo at that time. There's ZoomInfo. So you got to have like, you know, enterprise license, which is going to, you know, cost you a minimum of 30 to 50,000. And then like, even like with the price of inboxes, they're sitting at like $9 to $12. So it's just like everything was just way, way, way less accessible. And so now what's happening is that, and we've seen this, it's like our lead rates have dropped across the last 2 years. And this is because there's so much more cold emails being sent out in the space where it makes it harder to really stand out and everyone's just hitting the same people with the same offers. And so I think like what makes the campaign stand out now, it all comes back down to the offer, right? Like if you're doing and having like a tangible offer that actually is wanted by the market you sell to, you could sell it and send it in any way and still get really incredible results. You'd be surprised. Like one of the offers we send for a client, you know, we're booking them or we're sending them over 100 plus leads every single month. And it's, you know, a 6-paragraph email, has a whole bunch of links in it, but it just is such a good offer for the market that they sell into that it just performs super well. So I think the first thing is that you just got to have the right offer and sell to like the right audience. And so like staying less general and staying less broad and getting more like hyper specific is what's going to really help. And then I would say the next thing is just figuring out how to like make the email seem risk-free. So if there's like a freebie that you can give or some service that you can do for free, of course you're going to get like some low quality leads. You just got to, you know, have that filtering process to make sure you're only taking on businesses that you actually want as a client. I think that's what's going to help you really stand out. So like if you're running cold emails internally and you're not getting paid like on a performance basis, like an agency like ours, that's what I would try to do. Like I would try to figure out like what's that free thing that I could give that doesn't really cost me much or maybe cost me a little, that I could just give with, you know, the thought, like I'd be okay with giving away if like the person didn't respond back or book a call or whatnot. And figure out how to bake that into your cold email campaign. So I think like the simple one for lead gen agencies, it's like, I think in our second email, we say something on the lines of like, hey, if you send over your top client, we'll build you a lead list of, you know, 5,000 plus companies that match that client. And then they'll send it over, we'll send over that list, and then we'll have like our SDR really, like our BDR really try hard on booking that person to a call. And our conversion rate on that is pretty good because the list quality is super high. So it's just like things like that, I think it's like what makes the cold email campaign even more successful.
Makes sense. So it's basically being able, one, offer is always the factor X in everything, not only cold email, but any sort of marketing. Mm-hmm. But then the second thing you mentioned is just like the pure amount of effort you're willing to exert to get a person. This is where people stop. It's like, hey, I have this cool thing. Go buy, like hop on a call with me. But that actually going a step further and offering some sort of a freebie, offering some sort of a giveaway is what's making a difference.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think like a lot of people have like that misconception and they just kind of think like, okay, if I give this thing away for free, like, you know, I'm just going to get the worst quality leads and I'm just going to get a whole bunch of people that want free things. And, you know, that's true to an extent, but you still attract people that you would want as clients. And like, you know, for most businesses, like they don't have any kind of lead flow, right? So it's like, so what that someone wants it for free, at least you're getting like a conversation started, you know, like that's what you need in the first place. You need a response. Right. And so I think like, you know, a lot of people just kind of think about it the wrong way.
Right. Do you think this is a possibility? And if so, how are you sort of planning for it? You know, Google or Microsoft or whoever comes out with an algo change and says, all right, no more cold emails. We're able to spot them. And somehow they're able to filter them out and cold email as a mechanism goes away. Do you think, one, that that's possible? And then two, if so, how are you preparing for it / adjusting for like for the future where that's
I don't think cold email as a channel will ever go away, right? Like email isn't owned by Microsoft or Google, right? It's they're just the biggest people in the space for it. Like, I'm sure they're going to come out with things that, and they have in the past, like 3 or 4 years, it's starting to get even more increased, but they're going to constantly come up with updates that make it harder to land in primary and whatnot. But, you know, at the end of the day, like, I think it comes back down to a couple of things. Like, I think there's always going to be people in the space that figure out a way to make it work. And I think like with cold emails, there's always going to be a way to make it work because at the end of the day, all we're doing is doing what you're doing in a regular email, which is sending like a relevant message to, you know, someone reaching out about something and seeing if they're interested. So I think like you just got to
keep the fundamentals, send like something that's hyper relevant, and like you're always going to figure out a way to land a primary. I don't think there'll ever be a way to like completely block cold emails, mm-hmm. Like all the way through. I just don't see how that would be possible. But hey, if that does happen, I think like our skills translate, and we would just have to pick another channel. So like the next channel I hop on immediately is either outbound or cold calling or like LinkedIn outreach. And so yeah, I think like you just have to see that ahead and then kind of pivot accordingly.
Makes sense. And the reason why I'm always sort of doom and gloom, but I guess I run operations, mm-hmm. and I have to be.
And he's Slavic, so you know.
And I'm Slavic, right? So I'm always doom and gloom. No, but that makes a lot of sense. Ryan, you're up.
I was still going to follow up the question.
There we go.
We're back.
There we go. Ryan,
I thought just offended you so deeply that you were like. Oh, Slavic. Oh, no.
This sweaty.
Yeah.
You got the next question, Ryan.
Oh, okay. So, all right. So, speaking of outreach, right? I mean, I'm sure you do too, Nick and Tony. Like, I get, you know, quite a lot of like cold DMs, not so much cold email, but cold DMs for sure, offering various things. And what's super interesting about like your story about the 5,000 leads is like, I think what a lot of people don't realize is that you can reach out with whatever offer, but we're always going to, anybody receiving it is always going to be evaluating it in a context of like the quality of the thing that you're offering. And well, I guess for like Instagram DM or like a Twitter DM or whatever, in the context of like your profile. So I wonder, or like, I'd love your guys' thoughts on this. Like, I think everybody's down the whole rabbit hole of like $100 million offers, just make the offer. And it's like this battle to see who can like say the bigger number or like the better thing or give a giveaway that's just like genuinely not very good or doesn't match the context of the profile. So like, for example, I get offers that are like, hey, can we do a analysis of your YouTube channel for free? And I'm like, well, sure. Like, how many people do you have on your YouTube channel? Because like the analysis that I get from somebody with a million subscribers, it could be the same analysis. They could be saying the same thing, right? Is very different than the analysis I would get from the person with zero YouTube channel. Or like, hey, I want to help you with branding on Twitter. Like, if you have fewer followers than me on Twitter, like, I'm not going to listen to, like, it doesn't matter what you say. I'm not really going to listen to that. And yeah, so I almost wonder if we have an abundance of offers now, but a lack of, I don't think people understand, like, the context for making an offer or, like, the amount of trust and reputation that you need to make the exact same offer and have people actually like listen to you. Or if you have a bad lead, if you had a list of 5,000 leads and it was like a bad list, people would be like, well, never mind. Like I'm going to work with you less now. Like, I don't care about the free thing because the free thing is bad.
I think it comes back down to who you reach out to. Right. So I think like, in your case, right? Like if they have less followers and they're hitting you up on Twitter DMs, like it makes no sense, right? So like, I think a lot of people running that kind of outreach, like they'll probably get similar messages from people like you. And so like, you know, you see that, then you need to pivot and then you need to change your offer. And it's less of like, hey, can I do analysis on your current Twitter profile? Maybe it's like, let me go on LinkedIn Sales Nav, look at people that have posted LinkedIn content and adjust my offer to hey, I saw that you're posting on LinkedIn a ton, but couldn't find you on Twitter. Could I help you, you know, what's it called? Repurpose your content from LinkedIn to Twitter for completely free for the first, you know, 10 posts or something like that. Right. You know, then it's like, it'll make sense. Like you'll probably get some conversions on that. But I don't think like a lot of people think that far ahead. I mean, I see the Twitter DMs that I get or I used to get on my old account that were just like an absolute like shambles. Like they were just so bad. I think like most Twitter DMs are generally pretty bad and I don't blame it.
I think it's just like, you know, Twitter's not like LinkedIn where you can put a lot of filters and find your ICP. You kind of just have to do like, oh, everyone that follows Nick, or like the people that are Nick's following. Like that's the targeting criteria you can put in most of these kind of like tools that do the Twitter outreach. And like, it just makes it harder to stand out. Cause I mean, I think like I have like a whole bunch of friends from high school that follow me. So if they got a Twitter DM saying, hey, I can do a Twitter analysis, like there's no shot that they reply, you know?
Right. They just don't care about it. Yeah. It's super interesting. Like sometimes, yeah, the offers, I think there's a lot of people that are like, they're just trying to make the wrong offer. Right. Like we had the best cold DM I've ever received to this day was, by this guy, Nathan, who DM'd me like a year ago. And he's like, I read a lot about, or I was at the time, I was writing about like how I hated sweet potatoes and how sweet potatoes are like the worst, you know, thing ever, and talking about like endurance stuff, whatever. And he DMs me and it's like a multiple paragraphs. And he goes, hey, I hate sweet potatoes too. You know, like I ran ops for this agency that I started. We were doing the automation. I want to learn from you. I want to work for you. I'll do it for free. Keep me keep me around as long as I'm useful. And if I'm ever not useful, which is never going to happen, you can like fire me or whatever. And we brought him on as one of our developers. He's still with us. And so like, it's super interesting because like the right, I have this theory, like if you're like a normal human being, like just treat making an offer like asking a girl out. Like you just have to be like a normal, you have to be a normal human being. And it's not about like learning, you know, like learning the pickup line or learning like the thing. Oh, if I say like this word in this way, it's like this secret trigger or what I like. No, you have to be like a normal, if you're like a normal human being, treat the other person like a human being. It just works better. Like, it's unbelievably more effective, I think.
I think the other thing too is like with like cool, like any kind of DMing that you're doing on any social platform, like you have to do the social selling. And I think a lot of people just see these like lead magnets and like courses that are like, oh, you got to spam as much outreach as you possibly can. And so it's like, you know, we got to figure out how we could send 10,000 outreach messages a day. And it's just like, you know, like that's whenever, and like, you know, on a cold email, like that could kind of work because you're kind of like a cold traffic and like you're selling to people that are just in their inbox versus like, I think when you're on like any kind of social platform, they click into your profile, they see more about you, so forth. And like, it just needs to have like, kind of like, you know, Riot or not Riot, whoever, I forgot what the guy's name was that reached out to your developer. You know, he did that social selling aspect of like, hey, look, I hate sweet potatoes too. You know, let's partner up together. And then he gives like a really good offer behind it. And right. I think a lot of people that are sending a lot of DMs and like a lot of people that are kind of new to the space, they just can't think for themselves. Like they can't think that like, okay, I have less followers than Ryan. He's probably not going to be interested in my Twitter optimization course, you know? And like, I like they just kind of see like whatever's in like those free giveaways that everyone does on Twitter. And it's just like, okay, I'm just going to copy this to a T. I'm going to use the exact same message and just blast this out and see what sticks. And like that will work when you send massive amounts of volume, but it's just not the strategy I would advise on if you're kind of running any kind of like social outreach. And like, you just got to kind of think about it. Like on LinkedIn, for example, like you could go scrape everyone that engaged with my content, right? And you could run a cold or LinkedIn outreach where it's like, hey, I saw that you're engaging with a ton of cold email content and wanted to reach out. You know, I have this new tool that, you know, and so you kind of come in with that angle and then like that's social selling. And so like, I think there's ways to automate it and like personalize it at scale, but most people can't think that far because they just think of like the straightforward way of like, how can I spam out thousands of messages with like some offer that's probably not relevant and see what sticks.
Yeah. Yeah. And it like, if everybody it's like, so I built this automation for a client of ours years ago, and it was doing like just raw automation, right? But it was at a time when nobody was doing that, and so it didn't like it worked really, really, really well because he had no competition, right? Yeah. But like now, if you're like the 17th person in the same day where I've gotten an email or a cold DM that says like, hey, Ryan, have you ever tried cold DMs? We built a, and like literally they all sound the same, right? We built it. You guys could probably like recite the message, right? Like, we built an Instagram DM tool, or we built a DM tool that can send thousands a day. You know, would you be opposed to a X day free trial, or would you be opposed to blah, blah, whatever? Like, okay, I've gotten that exact same DM like lots of times, and everybody has. Yeah, I mean, you know, it's super interesting. Like, what I try to do, I saw this interview today, or not today, yesterday, with this guy named Nicholas Crown. So he was on TikTok. He was doing like the rich guy versus really rich guy series, and so he's doing like skits, right? And so he has a marketing agency. What I found super interesting from him is he said something like, the people, he has this theory, and he used to be like this banker guy, and he's kind of like this, the interview on the Danny Miranda podcast is like awesome podcast. Everybody should, I highly recommend it. He was talking about how he's like come to really be authentic with himself, right? And like really like, so he's naturally funny, and he wants to like kind of get that out, right? He said the people that are famous for no reason are just like the most authentically them. Like, they're not saying something to get attention or to get external validation. They're saying something because like it's just like what they love. It's just who they are, right? And my theory is that there's a lot of people making offers because they want the money. Like, they're only in this business because somebody told them like, you should be in the, you know, you got to go in the lead gen space. You got to go in the AI automation space. You got to go in this space because like it's a fast way to make money, versus being like, hey, I love to write, you know, I love like the craft of writing. I've always loved the craft of writing. Okay, I'm gonna go like make landing pages, or do copy for cold emails, or be a ghostwriter because I love writing. And there's a lot of people that are like, just how do I make as many offers as possible? Like, they don't think about the context of like who they are. They're trying to make the fast buck, and if it doesn't work in the first week, which like it never does, like no business is wildly profitable in like week one, they give up and switch offers, or they give up and, you know, do something else.
Yeah, and I think like most people don't think past like the first like 3 months of the business. They just want to make some money, go blow it, you know, go buy an AP or whatnot, and enjoy life. And like, they don't really think, okay, like 6 months down the road, like, can I still sell this to a cold audience? And then like, okay, like how am I going to actually build a team and infrastructure so that it's not all completely reliant on me? And like, they don't ever think all the way down that rabbit hole. Just because, yeah, like you said, like they're in it just to make a quick buck. They're not really in it to like become the best in the space or anything like that. And I think we're going to see a lot of that in the cold email lead gen space. Like, I see like 5-10 of these guys pop up, and I did a ton of consultations with them like in the last like 2-3 weeks, because I was trying to raise money for one of my cousin's kids. And so like, it's just speaking to a lot of these guys, like, dude, like none of them really have the skills or the know-how, which is completely fine, but they also don't have like the willingness to figure this out. Like, a lot of them, like, they would probably be better fit with just having a job, which is totally okay. You know, and so like I think that's like something we'll see in the lead gen space. A lot of these guys that just like, they start switching offers way quicker because they realize like the cold email lead gen space, it's tough, it's competitive, and like,
yeah,
it's like, if you're not wanting to do this for the next 3 to 5 years, it's not the quickest way to make money.
I'm a big fan of getting a job and then using the skill sets you learned on that job. Like, how much easier would it be for someone that's a CSM in your business to run a cold email agency after they've been working with you for 2 years, like, compared to someone who just like figured out how to, like, cold email is a thing, right, and bought the first course.
Yeah,
like, it's day and night.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And like, I think like any of our CSMs, really anybody on our team, like, I think they would absolutely crush a lot of these guys you see on Twitter and LinkedIn if they wanted to branch out on their own and started their own lead gen agency.
just because they've been able to work inside one and see like the processes, the way we go about like client churn and all these kind of processes we have in place. Like, you know, everyone simplifies the Legion like business. They're slowly like sign a client, send some emails, send them the positive responses, right, and then, you know, book them some calls, charge them for the calls, and then repeat. And it's like, yeah, that works whenever you have like under five clients, but it doesn't scale well. And so like being able to learn all these little tiny little things, that's what I think we've mastered in the last like 3 years. Yeah. We have a process for literally anything you can imagine in the business. So yeah.
And it's, and I think that theme is like so often across all businesses. Like we're seeing it in our space as well. Like everyone is trying to start an AI automation company because they've, you know, saw ChatGPT is like trending on Twitter. We're like, and we tweeted about it the other day, is like, good luck competing against, you know, Ryan, who has 15 years of engineering experience and automated for like Nestle and Mars. Like genuinely, good luck. Right. So and I think across the board, just being a bigger professional, it's what's going to get you success in any business model, not just automation, not just cold email. It's, I think across the board, being a professional and having the standards of delivery of not, you know, getting the client's money and then, you know, delivering a subpar service and then just letting the client go, doing the extra thing, sending out, you know, Christmas gift cards, stuff like that. It all compounds and ends up being compared to other companies.
No, I think it's funny though, because I think in this space, like in the op space, I'm seeing a lot of these guys that like learned Zapier like 5 days ago. They're like, oh, I can become an op consultant. And it's like,
right,
automations and operations is so much more than just Zapier. And so like, I find that hilarious.
Well, and it's, you know what's funny as well? So back to like the whole conversation about working for somebody else, like, I mean, that's what I did for 4.5 years, right? Just worked for another company. And the thing that like everybody misses is like working for another company gives you lots of access to difficult problems that you wouldn't otherwise have access to. So if somebody comes in, like they can Google like how to use Zapier, how to use Make, it's kind of like learning Microsoft Word or like Google Docs, right? You can like look at all the tutorials in the world on Google Docs, but you'll never be able to write a book because you don't have the ideas to write a book. You don't have the knowledge to write a book. And so like you just can't do very much with Google Docs as a tool in isolation. And in the same way, like all these automation tools, Airtable, Make, you know, Zapier, whatever, it's not Make and Zapier and Airtable. It's how do you solve a difficult business problem and make sure it works. So like our developers, so we do like toning, well, like 50 to 100 features per week for clients. And so each of our developers, they personally do 25 to 50 automations like per week. Some of them are like little bug fixes, little like, you know, feature tweaks. And some of them are like things that are kind of auto DMable. Like they're very sophisticated things. And so they're just getting more access to difficult problems. Whereas somebody who comes in and they know the tool, like no one's going to trust them with the operations of their business. So no one's going to give them somebody who's new, no one will give them access to difficult problems. Right. And so somebody tries to start in the cold email space, it's the same way. Like you can research, like, how do I, you know, write a cold email? How do I set up instantly? But then it's like very different than, how do I set up 100 cold email accounts like as quickly as possible? And how do I write offers and compose offers for like all these different business types? Right? Because if you've never done that before, when you're, you know, given a new problem that you don't know how to solve, like their clients need to be pissed off. You're not going to be able, it'll take you longer to fulfill. You know, it's practice with anything. So like in the automation space specifically, because like I know about that. You know, if somebody comes in and they talk to a potential client, they don't have experience solving problems. They won't be able to identify problems because clients hire operations and automation people because they don't know operations and automation. So the client is not going to be able to tell you like, oh, here's my system, like automate it like this in this way. You have to figure that out, right? And if you've never done that before, you're going to have very you're only going to be able to identify a few little problems. So you're only going to be able to charge a little bit of money. You're not going to make very much money. You won't have enough money to hire people, and you won't have enough skills to hire people either. So you're going to have to be like a glorified freelancer for a while anyway, but you won't be able to get clients. So you get little practice as a freelancer compared to like our team, which is doing 25 to 50 times as much as a, like the average freelancer per week. So we're just getting better way faster.
Yeah. It's kind of funny too. Like I did the, like if I'm looking to hire ops consultant or like an automation expert, like, and I go through their, to their profile and like the content they're posting is like some like super basic onboarding flow. Like there's no chance I'm hiring them. Like literally right. Zero chance.
Right.
If you're not showing me some like complex formula or something complex that you built, like there's just zero chance that I think that you know your stuff. It's funny because like the reason I say this is like I got this auto DM or DM from this one guy and like I always see him on Twitter. I don't even remember his name is, but I always see him like commenting on stuff. And I've seen him go through like three iterations of offers. Like I think first he was like an email marketer, and then he was like a UGC content agency, and now he's like an ops consultant. And yeah. I remember I look at his profile. And the like his like number one tweet that he had like pinned, and I'm assuming he's super proud of it because it's pinned. It was like how I built a onboarding flow that helped an agency streamline their business, and it was literally just like here's a Google Doc or a Google form, and when they fill it, it creates the client's folder channel inside of Google Drive. Yeah, and it like creates a Slack channel, and I was like, hey, dude, this is like this. You can't be an ops consultant, and that can't be your like, right. Like that can't right. be your main right. thing. So I tried that funny.
Well, and so I think, I mean, obviously they can, because what's going to happen, and I love when people do this, what's going to happen is they're going to follow, they're all going to follow me to learn how to actually do it. And then all their, the Twitter algorithm is going to be like, oh, like actually Ryan's the guy. And so their followers, any followers they find, they're like unpaid affiliates, right? Which is perfect. Which I love. Yeah, it's fantastic. Like, so. Definitely happy to have an army of unpaid affiliates.
I always find it funny too, because it's like sometimes I'll see like these other like, because obviously I speak a lot about like our internal processes and automations and stuff, and like I always see like other lead gen agencies like create like auto DMs or speak about it somewhere about like, oh, I created this process that did this, and I'm like, guys, that was me. Like I was here. Right. And like I whenever anyone see anyone say like, oh, like charging client a monthly tech stack fee, and I'm like, I came up with it. That's my sauce. And like, yeah, there's just like so many things where I'm like, you know, these guys are just reading my content, taking the exact same process and building it internally. Hey, keep doing it. Like, I'm happy. I'm happy you guys grow the business.
I mean, that's imitation is the greatest form of flattery, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. But it's also funny too, because like sometimes we'll post something that like is like it's super hard to do because you got to have like a developer. You can't just no code it. And like, I always get the DMs like, hey, how'd you build this? Like, can you send me a loom of like how this works? And I'm like, absolutely not. Figure it out. But good luck.
Right. Dude, I get the same thing from like other automation people. And they're like, how did you do this? I'm like, literally, this is your job.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you supposedly on the internet, you're portraying that you know this stuff. Like, you figure it out.
Yeah, good luck.
Like, I kind of enjoy posting some of that stuff as like, kind of just to bait. I'm like, I'm a bit of a dick.
Oh, same. Right?
Like, just to bait people. We just built this. Tony, should I tell him about the stuff we built for Ken?
No, I don't know.
Hey, I know Ken. He's talking about Ken from AutoUp.
Yeah.
We talked to him.
He's the guy. I love him.
Yeah, Ken's awesome. Good guy. So like, we built this like Apollo scraper that just rotates through, like it will like milk one account until the one account gets rate limited and then like switch accounts. And so we can get leads from Apollo. Yeah, it's like the kind of like it's kind of like the whole like, what was it like Scrapey Bird or what was the thing that you built? You're like Apollo.
Yeah, I'm not gonna.
Yeah,
it's allegedly, I own it. I don't.
Oh, somebody. Oh yeah. It's a trust in Singapore which owns a shell company that came in islands, which owns, which gives Nick Abraham access to it for entertainment purposes or for, you know, but anyway, like, yeah, we built some stuff that like, it gets leads for like, you know, a thousandth of a cent or whatever it is.
Yeah.
4,000 leads for a couple cents. Basically it's just like the make credits. Right.
Yeah.
But yeah, like genuinely, like we we don't hire anybody. Like, we do no code stuff, but like, we don't hire anybody who doesn't know how to code. Like, you have to know how to code. Cause like, I just found that there's people that come in through, like, they want to do like operation stuff and they learn like no code stuff as their first technical thing. And they just don't know how to solve anything like, complicated or like sophisticated.
Anything that doesn't have a native integration, like, they can't figure it out.
Oh, they don't know. Like, like, if you give them like JSON, they're like, I don't know what to do with this, right? Or like, if you're like extracted with regex, they're like, what's regex? And you're like, okay, hold on a second. Yeah. Let me back up here and like teach you like HTML first. And then same thing with like marketing automation. Anything with marketing automation, like, marketing automation is like the most simplistic stuff ever. So like, we couldn't even hire somebody like that as a developer to then train them afterwards, because they wouldn't be able to do anything.
I think the cool thing I've seen recently is like, so I think there's two ends of the spectrum, and you got to find like the happy medium. So it's like, there's the total no code expert we're talking about right near here that can't solve these complex issues because they don't know how to code. And then you got like on the right hand, you got like the full stack developer that's, you know, knows front end, knows back end, you know, that they're talented all the way, but then they overcomplicate things. So they like, you know, they have no idea of no code tools. And like, you know, if they just need to build like a simple integration to create a Google Doc or something like that, they're thinking like, oh, I'm going to code this thing from like top to bottom.
Right. And it like, takes like 10 times longer than it really should.
Yeah. And it's like, if you could find like those developers that are starting to learn no code. So they start off as a full stack developer and they learn no code and understand like the fastest way to build things and like how to build an MVP, and then the things that don't scale or can't be solved to code, like that's like the perfect developer, in my opinion. And like, all of our,
that's exactly like what we hire. Yeah. That's exactly, I would totally agree. Yeah. Totally
my CTO agree. My CTO did a really good job, because he actually started learning all these no code stuff. He used to work at IBM, actually IBM or Deloitte, one of those. And he's phenomenal. Like, he's built like all the tools that like have really helped me scale my agency all the way and whatnot. And what he does right now is like, with all his friends from college that he are also developers, but they're like full stack, they don't know anything about no code, we'll teach them no code. And like, it's, and then we'll end up hiring them as well. And it's super cool to see just like how they went from thinking about like front end to now like, okay, let's go, you know, build something on Bubble or software real quick and connect it to Airtable and like it'll make some calls to some backend stuff that they build, and like we're able to build things so much quicker. And just to kind of see that progress and transformation with some of these developers is it's super cool. And I think like that space is going to be so huge. And like that's like, I mean, like you guys said, like that those are the true, like really talented developers that are worth every single dollar.
Yeah. And if someone here listening happens to be that person, tony@opskings.com, send over your resume. We're looking for more of you guys.
We're hiring now. Yeah.
Unless you work at Libra, then stay with us.
No. You know, you guys aren't gonna. You're not gonna learn. If you want actual variety of challenges, and as you know, get to work with plenty of lead gen agencies. And by the way, all of Nick's ideas, he posts on Twitter and all of our clients are like, hey, can you build this? Yeah. And then Nick is like, no, he just tells everybody to hire us. And so Nick is a great affiliate for us as
Nick
well.
Is a great lead channel for us. Like Nick
is probably
like, every time Nick does an audio, we get 5 to 10.
Oh, yeah,
I love to hear that.
It's fantastic. It's fantastic.
I need my percentage in equity.
Right. Oh, yes, so we'll give you we'll get someone in your team to like, you know, ship us a shirt or something. We'll get you a lead bird shirt or a lead bird
I love that
for working in Ops Kings. Like a little bird with like a little crown on top of it or something. I don't know.
It's actually funny too, because whenever anyone asks me like, hey, how do you build this, I'm like, I have no clue. Like, my CTO built it, but he's not gonna build it for you. So just reach out to these guys. Like, they'll figure it out.
Yeah.
And it shows.
Yeah. And if you work for us, you get to talk to Nick all the time. You know, it's all good. We're basically the same company at this point. So
exactly.
You know, there's no real point of working for Nick, because you know, just work for us instead. Is what I'm trying.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Hey, let me be able to use the work, and you guys pay the salaries, and we'll call it a day.
No problem. I don't mind sharing it. You got some, I mean, dude, like seriously, your system stuff is really phenomenal. Yeah, it's
you know what's cool too? It's like a lot of people will say that, but it's like the really cool stuff that like really like helps us like take something to the next level. Like that's the stuff I won't post about. And I mean, eventually whenever it's like something that I don't think is as important anymore, I will post about. But yeah, like we got some like crazy stuff in the chambers that obviously just helps us in a lot of different ways. But yeah, like it's really cool just seeing like the space like grow. Because there's just like endless possibilities of things you could build and streamline. And like I had like a friend reach out like I think about a month ago. He's building like a recruitment agency and he does a lot of stuff in that space. And like he was like, hey, look, this is our current process. Like you think you could automate this? Or like is it there, like how would you think about this? And I was like, I was looking at it and I was like, this is like a thing that takes like 3 to 5 days for them to do. And I was like, this could all be done like automatically just through Zapier, like nothing complex. And so I don't know. I just think like there's just like so much opportunity in this space for all these like automation type things.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, we did some stuff for Bennett at Zabota. You know, taking like a resume and extracting a text so that the text is like searchable and like in the database. I have some stuff on like, actually, we should talk about, I have some stuff on like system archetypes that I think is like super interesting. I think you might be interested in, because there's like different, what I've observed is like there's different like shapes of systems. So like a hiring funnel is different than a like a cold email campaign, right? In terms of like how the data structure works. So we've noticed like archetypes of systems and automations that kind of like, it's like pattern recognition, right? That I think is super interesting. But yeah, I mean, so there's sometimes like Tony and I will talk to a business owner. We're like, man, we want to like just do this for free and take equity in this business because like this is such a, like where the business owner is like, they've never seen it before. So they don't know how big of a difference this is going to make in their business. But yeah, it's super interesting.
Yeah. It makes me want to like just create more businesses and like start more businesses, even though that's like the shiny objects intro. Cause I'm like, thing like if all these guys in the space are doing this manually, like I could just automate this entire thing, and like I think I could, you know, I'm pretty good at acquisition, learning cold email and whatnot. Right. Like I think I could really grow this. And yeah, like you know, I think like learning these type of skills makes you like recession proof in every way possible.
Oh yeah,
because it's like,
oh yeah,
we can start companies for cheaper, scale them for cheaper, and grow them, and you know everything like cheaper because we know how to use automations and workflows and all these kind of things. It's like, as long as you figure out like one service market fit or product market fit. So like actually having an offer that you want to like people want, and then you figure out like just the acquisition channel, like all the other stuff is like very easily done for people like us.
Yeah.
And so like, I think that's like what's really cool about like being able to acquire these type of skills.
Oh yeah. And the cool thing is we're getting so many like legacy businesses that you would never think of that are, like Zapier is like pretty familiar to everyone in the online space, but for like these legacy businesses, no one knows about it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I think like my first ever marketing job was building a website for my uncle for his like adoption agency. And I built it on Wix. And like, I even remember at that time, like, you know, he had like forms on his website that he paid like some other agency to build. And like, those were like so old, like the way it like, you know, when someone used to submit something and like it would come into his email and like, you know, the things he would have to do afterwards, like I just helped him automate all of it. And like, that was like my first ever taste of Zapier and being able to use it. But yeah, I just think like it can be used anywhere and everywhere. And like, I'll even like whenever like my girlfriend needs something for like school where it's like a repetitive process, like I'll figure out how to automate it. And things like that. It's, or like if she wants like a notification for, this is like a simple one, like whenever she stores an email, she wants it to like send to her checklist, and it's like that's the easy one, like you don't have to copy and paste it, right? And like you can use Zapier for it. So I love like the no code space. I think like it's so huge and it's only going to get better, and I think like as more and more people like you guys are like posting content in this space, it's only going to continue to keep evolving. I think even with like ChatGPT and OpenAI and all the possibilities there, it's like it's just going to get crazier and crazier.
Most important question of all, what should we name the podcast?
Let's keep it basic. Let's keep it the Ryan and Tony Show.
There we go.
All right.
Hey, simple scales, fancy
fails. Works.
Awesome. Well, thank you guys for having me on. I enjoyed this conversation.
It's been a pleasure, Nick. Thank you, sir.
Absolutely.